Chapter 39. New York, September 1986. I looked up from my cappuccino. We sat in the cafe that I remembered, bathed in September sun, and watching the gaudy boats glide and turn before us. Alice had come in an electric wheelchair. Julie had escorted her here and then left. "I know I spoke of walking," she said, "but I'm afraid I meant it rather euphemistically. Still, one can pretend. It does much the same thing, the fresh air, the sights, the sense of being out in the world, exploring." For all that, she was dressed exquisitely as before, and the poochy scarf that she'd tied around her neck almost made up for the lack of colour in her complexion. Alice seemed energized by the life about us. She watched the couples in boats and the families chattering at nearby tables with a kind of hungry delight. I, by contrast, had slept badly again and felt I would have far preferred the hush of her airy drawing room to the chaos of Central Park on a Saturday. My mind had been too full that night to switch off. I had been unable to prevent myself from imagining various scenarios in which things had turned out differently. Scenarios in which Alice's mother hadn't committed her crime, or in which Evie's conscience had forced her to tell my mother about the letter. "So, you have met my Tom?" Alice asked me now. "Yes," I looked up. "Mr. Stafford was kind enough to invite me to stay with him." "How is he?" "Very well." I thought of his vigour and health, of how much better he seemed to be faring in old age than she. She smiled. "That is good to hear. And you managed to contact him. I have learned from experience, you see, that it is rather difficult these days." She said it lightly, but I wasn't fooled. I thought of that postcard Stafford had kept so carefully and never found himself able to answer. "Yes," I said. "I wrote to him and sent him the drawing. The one of you by the lake?" She brightened at this. "You saw the drawing?" "Yes." "Did she see it too? June?" "No, I'm afraid. No, she didn't." "So she never knew." The pain was so naked upon her face that I considered lying, considered whether perhaps I might say that when Mum had boarded that plane, she knew that she had not, as a child, been cast aside. But I couldn't do that. I shook my head, then immediately felt compelled to add, "But she was happy, you know. Content. It didn't make her a victim." "No, I can see that." Alice sipped her coffee carefully. I am so terribly proud of her. I wish I could have known her, or met her just once. Perhaps it's selfish of me to feel that. Perhaps it was best that she never knew about me, that I never had the chance to explain. I wouldn't have wanted to jeopardize what she had with her stepmother. It was wrong of Evie not to tell her. She shook her head. I'd like to believe that, of course I would, but was it really? Would I have acted differently in her position? I wonder. We listened to the splashes and the screams of delighted children for several moments. "Is he still working?" Alice asked, suddenly. "Yes," I told her. "He's still painting every day, I believe. It is how I imagine him, on his wild isle, with his canvases, surrounded by the wind and water. It is exactly the sort of place where he would be happiest. You liked him? Did you get along?" "Yes, very well." Alice seemed pleased by this. "I thought you would. You're quite like him in many ways. Funny, because I always thought expression, gesture, that sort of thing, came from nurture, not nature. Perhaps they too are in the genes." This didn't make sense. "You're speaking of us as if we're related." Alice looked at me, and there was the longest pause. Then she said, "But my dear, you are. Tom Stafford is your grandfather." I felt as if I'd fallen down the rabbit hole. "No," I said. "No, he isn't." She gave a laugh then, more surprised than amused. "My grandfather is the man you met in Venice, Julian." "That is what Tom believes. It's what I told him. But it was a lie. I never did have those sort of relations with Julian, though certainly he tried." she sighed. So, you see, everything I told Tom that day in the garden was true, except the part that wasn't. Why? I asked wildly. Why would you do that to him? I saw the couple at the next table glance our way and managed with an effort to lower my voice. I think it broke his heart. It sounded drastic, but I realized the truth of it even as I spoke. I know. Her voice was small. It was a necessary cruelty. If you can believe such a thing. And if you can accept that, perhaps you can also understand that I did it for him. You've met Tom, Kate. You know what sort of man he is. He would have given it all up, everything he hoped for. He would have continued doing that job he detested in order to support us. I am sure that he would have resented me in the end. But what about afterwards, when you thought the baby had died? Why make it his tragedy too? It would have been a needless cruelty. I want you to know something, Kate. It wasn't only his heart that was broken when I told that lie. I couldn't stop myself from going further. If you had kept her, my mum, if they hadn't taken her to the orphanage, would you have confessed to him eventually? Yes, I think so. I wanted to leave him free to do the thing he loved. I'd planned to run away with the baby. I knew that we would go to Paris. Then maybe when Tom had had the chance to realize his hopes, perhaps I would have told him, not in order to bind him to us, but because he deserved to hear the truth. How did you know it would be Paris? When I was 16 years old, my aunt, Lady Margaret, I supplied. She looked at me in surprise. Yes, Aunt Margaret took me to Paris for a weekend. We went to her favourite café, near the Boulevard du Montparnasse. The place was full of interesting sorts, but there was one woman in particular. She was by herself, and she had ordered a coffee. There was a small dog sleeping at her feet, and she had a book held up in her right hand like this. She mimed it. I thought to myself, that is the person I want to be. Someone who can sit on her own in a café without being answerable to anyone. She smiled. You can tell from that how naive I was. She could have been someone's mistress. She could have been killing time while her husband worked. To me, however, she represented someone in charge of her own destiny. And I thought to myself in that moment, Paris is where I could be that person.